Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Rugby Retrospective podcast thing. I got the name close to right there. The podcast that's just burning goals before we started recording. And now we have started recording. It's all a massive problem, all massively downhill.
So we've started recording. When are we going to start recording?
We've started recording now. This is fine.
Okay.
We were speculating moments before coming on air. So the Premiership said six players have passed or have. Wow, what a start! This was going so well until
it was going so well before, and now I don't know. It's ruined now.
Well, that voice you hear is the one and only Tom Savage from the Free Red Kings. Thank you both for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm barely awake, but I'm here. I'm present.
Yeah. Welcome. That's all we can ask for. Yeah. You've heard already. We don't care if people are awake, dopey, whatever. I've made that abundantly clear. Yeah.
Hence why us two are presenting this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone let that happen.
No.
How are we doing? How are we all?
I'm good. I've been trying to keep up with the Super Rugby, breakdown stuff. I've been kind of looking at that a lot, and mainly it's just a relief not to be having to do my own podcast for a change. So this is good. I'm not sure what levels of prep go. Like I don't prep for my podcast, so it's just like this is. I just get to just sit down. Somebody else is recording. I don't have to worry about the sound. That's your problem. So yeah, I'm fine. I'm grand.
That's perfect. Yeah, when I did your podcast, I was amazed at how little. So actually, it's worth mentioning that when I was doing your podcast, so what was it? A couple of months ago? Maybe yesterday? I can't tell.
Was that last week? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But I think there'd been some error in communication somewhere, and I thought I was recording your podcast, and you thought. You were recording this podcast.
Yeah, because I had been ambivalent in what was going on. I'm not sure, because I'd said it to you that time in Cork. But then when it came to it, I was just like, yeah, this must be for his podcast. Because in my head, it was only, well, I'll do the podcast in person. So I just didn't twig. Oh, yeah, we'll do that. So I was preparing for this podcast then. And then just had to... switch over very quickly, because I think it was only a few hours before I realized, hang on, this is supposed to be for my...
Hang on, so did you watch Ireland v Australia again in preparation for your own podcast?
I did, but it's just like I broke down some of the clips from it, basically. I just went to look at it, and I had looked at it all before. I'd done all this prep ages ago, so all this prep. I watched this and I looked up at some of the stuff beforehand. But yeah, when it came to now, I'm just gonna remember. Sure. I'm very good at remembering things.
Like
I'm very tired, but I can remember.
Yeah. Should we talk about the six Premiership players who have COVID-19 then?
Oh yeah, that was the thing we were beginning to say. So my speculation before we went was Danny Kaye and Chris Ashton, I feel fairly nailed on with. And we were just discussing Bryce Heame, who I reckon Bryce Heame probably licks doorknobs on his way out of rooms and has since been tested positive several times. He's the first person to get coronavirus four or five times.
Yeah, I was saying that he might be really careless with the way he handles counters and stuff, that he's going to pick it up somewhere inadvertently. And the most boring way he can possibly pick up the coronavirus, at least do it in an exciting way. God.
Like, you'd want to get it in a situation a bit like Speed, you know, where there's like you're stuck on a bus and it's trapped over a certain number of miles per hour. If you caught coronavirus there, you'd be like, okay, well, fair enough. I've kind of earned that. But like when you catch it in the shops, it's just a bit like, it's a bit unwilling.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And that's what when you go to hospital as well, when you go to hospital and get tested for coronavirus and they start treating you for it, they should ask, how did you catch it? And if it's a cool enough way, then they'll treat you, you know. Whereas if you caught down the shot, yeah. Like, oh, come on, mate. You can do better than that.
Okay. Well, you were picking up a bit of yogurt and you caught coronavirus.
Yeah. Death via yogurt.
Okay. You mentioned speed. That leads me on to two things. One, if speed is a way of catching it, then maybe John Hardy has it. There's a little drugs joke for you. And secondly, so of course, the speed is a film, but a much superior film, in fact, you might say the best film ever made, is the film Crank, starring Jason Statham, which is basically a remake of Speed, in which Jason Statham plays the bus. So what I want to propose is Crank 3, in which Jason Statham has coronavirus and has to give it to as many people as possible inside 48 hours.
Starring Danny Kerr and Bryce Heem.
Yeah, yeah. They get cameos.
That'd be cheating, though, if you gave it to Bryce Heem. Then it's just like, there's no real kind of juice in the movie then, because he's just off and he's just licking countertops and whatever else. It's like, yeah. That isn't exciting. That's, you know, that's just something that's... I reckon he does that anyway. So it's just like, he's in, look, he doesn't explain this.
Bryce, he goes, not again. Every day this week I've caught the coronavirus. I want to make it clear that Bryce Heem doesn't have a law degree or anything, can we? He can't sue us for libel. we just picked a random Premiership player.
Yeah. I just tried to pick like somebody who plays for an obscure club, you know? I was trying to think back rower, then I just thought, no, I'd love to pick on wingers.
Yeah, and Bryce Heem is a pretty cool name.
It is,
It's fun to say.
Yeah.
Bryce Heem is the kind of name you only get in New Zealand provincial rugby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've come to recognise this as well, that there are certain names I will hear for the first time in Super Rugby Aotearoa, for example, and whenever I've watched the ITM Cup, whatever it's called now, the Air New Zealand Cup, whatever you want to call it. There's certain names I hear for the first time and I go, I'm sure I've heard of them, just because they sound like a Kiwi rugby player.
Yeah,
they've just got really Kiwi-ish names.
I'm pretty sure the Sevens team have recycled the same six names for the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's been 10 Will Jordans who played for the Sevens team.
It's like on Football Manager when you get to regens and they've got just from the pool of players already in the game and they just randomly put two names together. It's exactly like that. They just put together a random comment. It'd be like, instead of, you know, it'd be Dan McCaw, right, and Richie Carter are now playing. Let's go with those.
I can remember there was once on Rugby Challenge, because it randomly generates just based on any player in the game, including ones you've made yourself. Yeah. And I can remember you did basically a 15 of film characters, and one of them had the first name The. And then it just came into, like, it just generated, like, the name, like, The Joseph or something like that.
That'd be cool. That'd be if you know, you're the guy Jonathan Joseph. If he decided to just get really into referring to himself in the third person, he could just start. The is my new first name now.
Yeah. I think he could. Ryan Wilson wanted to name his son just Wilson, like a Brazilian footballer. Which I think is a very good bit.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
his wife was not into it.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing that the Elon Musk's child, XAEA12 or whatever it is, at least there's no Premiership players or Pro 14 players naming their children that. Not that we know of, anyway.
Okay, which Premiership player, though, would be, or which rugby player would be most likely to name their son after an equation?
Joe Marler.
Joe Marler, for the Christ, for the banter.
It'd be Bounce. And he would get it shaved into his head.
Joe Marler would name his son 80085.
And when it's like when he gets the scan back of the baby, he'd have that shaved into his head as well. And it's actually quite touching. It's a beautiful moment.
It would be good banter, to be fair.
It would be great banter.
He loves banter.
It would be great banter. I worry about what Joe Marler's up to at the minute. Now he can't do any banter with his teammates in lockdown.
Well, did that thing where The Premiership players were asked to do a video to support people through COVID-19, like particularly NHS workers. And he then decided to make it all about himself and start talking about, oh yeah, let's follow what Bozza's saying, lads. And it's just like, oh, come on, Joe Marler, just stick up for the NHS. Take this one seriously, mate. Come on.
He tripped over his dog in that video as well, which was sort of funny. You know, people falling over dogs is always quite funny. So fair play to Joe Marler. That is a career highlight, and that should be on the highlights reel.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that scene from Only Fools and Horses, except instead of your man falling through a bar, it's him falling through a dog. It's iconic, really.
Should we? We're 10 minutes in. Should we mention what game we're covering?
Yeah.
I'm just going to mention it in passing, and then we can, you know.
Sure. Pretty big game.
So it and it's in one of the history big games we talk rugby. About from the tournament. Yeah. So we the idea is that we were going to talk about Ireland against Australia, Ireland 15, Australia 6. So it was pretty much the first big upset of the 2011 World Cup. It was right. I was thinking about this when I was watching it. Is this arguably Ireland's biggest win in a World Cup?
What about the quarterfinals?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, I can't remember. Have they won any quarterfinals?
Not, well, you know, I mean, there's the moral victories, of which we've had quite a few, and hey, I hold them close to my heart.
There's the friends you made along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was, you know, it was a good time. It's not necessarily about the end point. It's about how you got there and the fun you had along the way, and we certainly did have a lot of fun. The yeah, like I hear this a lot from you know, friends of mine in New Zealand who are constantly referencing. But what is that even like to not ever win a quarterfinal? How do you deal with this? And it's just like, look, failure at a World Cup. I'm used to it now. When it comes to the knockouts, it just happens. It's just like, oh, there you are. It's a bit like that, you know. Hello, darkness, my old friend. It's like, hello, quarterfinal exit, my old friend. It comes back and it's just, you know, I'm okay with it now. It's just like, if we ever get past the quarterfinal, like in the next time around, I don't know. I wouldn't even know how to react to that. Like, we're not going home now. Oh my God.
Got to reschedule those flights.
Yeah. My God, I got to change it.
You know, they tell them when they come for the quarter, they turn up for the semi-final, tell them at the beginning to adopt their usual positions and they all go and get on the flight home.
Like this one in 2011, that hurt because, like, I thought we could beat Wales, and obviously we didn't. But in this World Cup, I thought it was as good a shot as we were ever going to get at least to a semi final, and it was just a little bit more deflating than normal because it was to Wales.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm not that sorry.
No, it's just like I demand reparations for this.
I'll go get Mike Phillips. I'll drag Mike Phillips down to apologise personally.
Oh, please do not bring him down. Before we came on air, you were talking about the Sexton versus O'Gara battle as well.
So oh, God.
Is that something you have like a key memory of coming into this World Cup?
Very much so. Like, you look at Ireland from... Everything kind of goes back to that Munster versus Leinster semi-final in 2009. Because Ireland won a Grand Slam that year. And one of the big memories of the 2009 year was Rob Kearney, in a meeting before the Six Nations in 2009, kind of putting it up to the Munster players, kind of saying, well, why don't you play like this for Ireland? Pretty much. And that was kind of seen as a bit of an impetus because Declan Kidney had come in straight from winning the Heineken Cup with Munster, and Ireland won a Grand Slam that year. And that semi-final in May after the Grand Slam was sort of the emergence of Johnny Sexton, where he came along and in after Gordon Darcy scored a try, shouted in Ronan O'Gara's face, and that was a huge moment because O'Gara had called him a nobody or something like that in the previous game or something. There was a bit of edge there anyway. And then once Leinster went on to win that Heineken Cup, all of a sudden then, up until that point, it was Ronan O'Gara or we're in an absolute panic if he gets injured. But now, Johnny Sexton emerged. He's the guy, he's looking like he could be the guy now. And in the aftermath of that, with the fact that Declan Kidney was also the coach, you know, former Munster coach, there was a kind of a real battle for that number 10 jersey of, do you stick with O'Gara? Do you go with Johnny Sexton? Both guys had their supporters. You know, you ask different people about Ronan O'Gara. Oh, he's finished. He's this, that, and the other. You ask Sexton. Oh, his goal kicking is this, that, or the other. And coming up into this 2011 World Cup, like there was this... In the Six Nations and in the build-up to it, there would be the kind of the bench cam. It would basically, the camera would go on to, after Johnny Sexton did something, either kick a penalty or miss a penalty, the camera would go to Ronan O'Gara in the stands and would show him, yes, disappointing. If your man missed a penalty and kind of with the sort of, yeah, I would have got that. But like, it's the kind of thing where if they had a camera of the like Johnny Sexton in the buffet in the morning, if he picked up the last sausages before he got on, you go to Ronan O'Gara, cut to him kind of going, oh yeah, typical. It's just they had this rivalry between the two of them, and it was kind of a real defining factor coming into this World Cup. A big, like, who do you go with, the experienced guy or the new guy who is doing so well with Leinster? And it was a defining kind of, I suppose, battle for what Ireland were going to look like going forward, especially coming into this World Cup.
I go with O'Gara because O'Gara's not somebody who, neither O'Gara or Sexton are really sort of people who can be civil with their enemies. I can remember specifically there was one thing with O'Gara when the Ospreys had just played Munster and the Ospreys had won, and O'Gara and Mike Phillips really didn't get on. And like famously they'd had like arguments on the Lions tour and stuff playing 9 and 10 together. And after the final whistle, when they were going through shaking everyone's hand, the camera was showing that tunnel. And when Phillips and O'Gara kind of intersected, they both just didn't look at each other and just walked straight past each other. And there was just like an unspoken but known disrespect towards each other. And I love that shithousery. Oh,
I love it. I love the idea of it not ending once the final whistle goes.
Yeah.
It's like as in, yeah. Oh, just that spite.
Yeah.
It's I love that.
No, don't like you. Fair enough. Yeah,
quite beautiful. Isn't like as in the whole idea of like, oh, we'll shake hands and be friends after the game. It's like, come on, no, we're not. Stop that.
I remember about that period as well, because that was not long after that 09 Lions tour, and Ronan O'Gara had gone on this rant in the media about how he should have started ahead of Stephen Jones, and he said that, well, they said it's about combinations, but I don't have a problem with Mike Phillips. It's like, look at your entire, every time you played Wales or the Ospreys, ever. Look at all the evidence. No, you don't. Yes, you do have a problem with Mike Phillips. You two don't get on. As you say, that's not the only case of them not shaking hands.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, this whole thing about Johnny Sexton and Dan Biggar are basically sworn enemies. And those two will never get on, you know?
Because they're the same person.
They are. They're identical.
Because they're, like, they're identical personalities.
And they've come up
playing with each other. There was a great clip from about... lead up to that first final in Leinster, the Ospreys won in 2010. The Ospreys did this kind of player diary thing in the lead up where they had different players kind of holding a shaky, like old school camcorder and filming each other walking around. So, like, there's a bit where Jerry Collins in Dublin Airport keeps walking up to people saying, I want a leprechaun hunt, and is just going up to people and asking them if they're leprechauns. Which is, there's like a, you can almost see Tommy Bow in the background kind of wincing and like, you, what are you doing? But, and it's the sort of thing they'd never let out these days.
No.
There's no way they let that get published. But there's a bit where they're on the flight and Tommy Bow is sat next, who's holding the camera, is sat next to Dan Biggar. And he says, tell you what do you think of Johnny Sexton? And Dan Biggar says something like, oh, you know, he's a good player. You know, I've got a lot of respect for him as a player and as a person. And then Tommy Bow says, why don't you tell us what you said to me earlier? And Biggar just kind of like awkwardly laughs and shakes it off and dodges the question.
Oh, my God. I want to have my 10 being having that kind of spiky, nasty kind of way about them where they have guys who are like, they have a list. And on that list, on the top of the sheet, it says enemies, and they have like 12 guys on that list. They're all from different teams. That's what I want. I want to see lads who've got that list of like a hate list, guys who they despise.
Yeah, I love that. Because like Dan Biggar, don't get me wrong, I get very annoyed sometimes at him complaining at the referees. But me and Robbie, after the game, Wales-France game, the Six Nations, we had a look through it. And there's a point where, after the game, he pulls aside Matt Carley, the referee, about 5 minutes after the final whistle's gone. And he starts giving him a lecture about how nobody likes him. Dan Biggar does. And he starts saying that, you know, you make it all about yourself. The players don't like you for this reason. We don't respect you. And you can hear it on the ref mic.
And it is, you've probably got to go over it because, as I say, the ref mic's being kind of lowered and there's players talking over it and the commentators talking over it and there's several things going on and there's music playing in the background and the crowd sound and everything. But if you go for it forensically, you can just about hear Dan Biggar say, this is why the players don't like you.
That's like, what a nightmare for the referee, like, as in that's like something he kind of like, wait a minute, is this a dream? Am I not wearing any pants now?
The best bit is, as well, Dan Biggar was then released as per his contract to play for Northampton the following week. And his referee was, of course, Matt Carley.
I think these guys just have a sort of, we're referees. I'd like to think that they also have an enemies list where they're just like, you know what? I hate this guy. I'm not giving him nothing today. It's just like, I would get that. Because like for me, you know, I see a lot of lads like sucking up the referees and stuff, you know, at club level and stuff like that. It's just like, I don't go along with that for a second. There's got to be a kind of a frosty disrespect between the referee and the players, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So to touch on the game itself, as we say, it's a big upset. And it,
why is it a big upset? Coming in as kind of like, you know, in that sort of way where we like to be at times, like the dark horse.
True. Yeah. I think I kind of went to this game maybe quite confident Ireland might win.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think maybe it felt like an upset because it was the only real upset in this World Cup.
Yeah.
You can make an argument for Argentina beating Scotland. Yeah. But really, that was a very level contest. I'm about to burp. I apologise for that. There you go. I did it out loud. I didn't hold it in.
Thank you.
And whereas this one, I think, was slightly more weighted towards Australia. But as you say, maybe calling it a big upset is unfair. It's just we didn't really get one in this way in the World Cup.
Yeah, other than France Tonga.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that's true.
I remember in this one, looking at Australia before the game and thinking, you know, we can beat these guys. Like, you know, but they had a whole lot of talent. Like, as in, I remember looking at their halfbacks, like, you know, Quade Cooper and, you know, Will Guinea. I remember even just Quade Cooper at the time was just this kind of, this weird mix between, like, kind of Vin Diesel and Carlos Spencer. Like, as in, he was just, had this unbelievable way of playing the game. And there was just something so exciting about this Australian team. I mean, James O'Connor playing on the wing. And, is it 10 now?
Yeah.
I think if you let him play long enough, like in 10 years' time, he might end up being a hooker. Like, he's just such a versatile dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine him being a hooker but still keeping the Justin Bieber haircut?
I think that I'd like to see a hooker rocking that. I think the hooker, if anybody in the forwards could get away with it, probably it would be the hooker.
That's true. The Shane
Burns. The way the game's going, yeah.
Dimitri Tarzewski, yeah. There's history of it.
Yeah.
I also like the thought of the next Fast and Furious replacing The Rock with Carlos Spencer.
Basically, that Australia backline is almost interchangeable because, like, you've got Beal, O'Connor, Ashley Cooper can all play any position in the backline, you know? You've got Anthony Fenger and Pat McCabe in the centres who,
McCabe can play fullback.
Yeah, true, and on the wing.
Anthony Fenger can't really play rugby, according to this World Cup, so he's...
Yeah.
And plus, when you look at Kirkley Beal, like, he's a guy, he was in, just, I remember when the Lions toured Australia, I'm not sure when it was, I think it was relatively close to 2011.
Yeah, 13.
Yeah, it was the next one after this. Kirkley Beal was so dangerous. And you look at a lot of these guys in that Australian backline, you're thinking,
unreal.
Yeah, backline, there's a lot of quality players there. When I was looking at their pack and looking at their back five, and I was looking at Rocky Elsom, a guy who, you know, had a very recent experience of seeing Rocky Elsom up close and personal playing for Leinster. And, you know, there was a kind of a feeling, though, with the selection that we had in our pack and back five in particular, that we maybe would have enough for these guys, maybe enough to sneak the win that we ultimately did. Mm.
There's one moment in that first half where the full Australian backline really gets going, where it's kind of, you know, Kirkley Beal makes a bit of a break and everyone's sort of offloading to each other and the next one's always on hand and you've got Quade Cooper frame mad passes and so on. And they are one pass, I think the last pass would have been to O'Connor, away from that finishing and that being a glorious try. And it doesn't quite stick, but they were so good to watch. And even in games where they weren't quite firing or where there was a really good defence against them, they were so talented. And as you say, they were, because they were basically interchangeable, everyone had handling skills, everyone linked up. Both of those wingers, you know, could play centre or fullback. You know, one of them's played 10, but both of them, according to the commentary as well, can kick goals. They, at one point, I don't know if you listened to the Kiwi commentary, but they talk about Adam Ashley Cooper being a goal-kicking option as well, which I never knew. Mm. But yeah, it's such a good and well-rounded backline in as much as all the players are fully rounded, complete-ish rugby players.
And such broken field runners as well. Like, as soon as they get a bit of a sniff of a line break, they are scoring. And the Irish defence was so good in this game. They never really looked like scoring. There was that one opportunity you were just on about. And there's another one where, in the second half, Quade Cooper saw a bit of a gap and then tried to flick it out the back. And it ended up being a forward pass. They were basically the only two opportunities where Australia really looked like they might threaten the line.
There's a few, though, where they get something going. And as you say, it doesn't look like they're going to finish it, but it's a really good opportunity. And it's also, there's two or three moments in which I've just got Curtly in all caps written in my own in my notes. One of which being that he regathers kind of a loose ball on the floor and immediately goes to stab through this lovely little grubber behind the fullback, which is so audacious in a way that only Curtly Beale does it. And he did the same thing against Wales in the Millennium Stadium the year earlier and scored off it. And I love watching Curtly Beale because of that, because he's skillful enough to get away with doing mad things.
He's a maverick.
And like, when you look at their...
more than a bit.
You look at Quade Cooper there too, with Curtly Beale. Like, that's almost like having two tens, two fullbacks, two kind of outside centres. Like, they're so versatile players. Like, as in, you look at Quade Cooper and you go, look, there's certain aspects of his game where he might be a little bit incomplete as a top-end player. But when it comes to his ability to kind of to make a small moment in a game that just smashes it open, Cooper with the likes of Beale and you know, you throw in Ashley Cooper and O'Connor as well, and never mind the midfield. Like, they had that ability, and I remember thinking before the game about how, like, those guys can make something happen. They, like, as in, you could be beating these guys all over the place, and they will still be able to create something in an instant that can get them right back into the game. And it's like, and it's just, they had that skill set that I think you always associated with Australian rugby, that back line was almost sort of, you would look at it as being kind of like representative of what you think Australia rugby is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it probably says a lot that Drew Mitchell on the bench and Digby Ioane out for what I can only assume is an injury, because such a good player, that the depth they have in that back line, Luke Burgess on the bench as well, as somebody who barely got any game time, blooming good player.
Yeah.
And was it at the time that their coach, Robbie Deans, is like, was he, I think, because he's a New Zealander. Was there a bit of kind of hassle amongst the sort of the rugby going public that a Kiwi was coaching them? Because I remember around that time hearing a few Australian, like, people who I knew kind of giving out about it.
Yeah, I remember it being a bit of an issue when he first got the job, and then he did a really good job at first, and suddenly they beat the All Blacks in that famous game in Hong Kong, and they were pulling off really good results, and I think it was kind of forgotten a bit. And then it was around this World Cup when he dropped Matt Gitto, and Matt Gitto sends that tweet saying, was it, thank you ball boys, thank you linesmen, and nobody else, after he got dropped. And then from there, I think that someone else got dropped as well, like in quite questionable circumstances, and they lost to Samoa, and things started to turn a bit. And I remember Quade Cooper saying the atmosphere was toxic, and everything just kind of going straight downhill from there. Not even downhill, just a vertical drop, you know, like oblivion.
Like walking through the trap, and then it's just down into a pit. There's spikes and stuff down there. But like when I think of this game in particular, though, like, again, there was sort of, you mentioned it there, like, is in that it was like the biggest Irish result in the World Cup up until this point. I think it's actually very close to there, because this when I remember looking at this group beforehand, and you know, you look at Italy, the US and Russia, like, is in, a lot of people, like, our broadcasters here at the time were making quite a big deal over the Italy game, you know, that it was like that there's a real danger here that Ireland could end up, you know, losing this one, and you know, the Italian game, never mind the Australian game, we were thinking about finishing in the top two, and that Italy would be a big obstacle. But when you look at this Australian game, it was second up. So, I mean, it wasn't even one of those ones where you were, you know, basically plotting the whole pool to get to this game. And there was just this real feeling that with the team that we had, and you can see the team that we named, like, that there's no reason why we can't win this game with the talent and with the experience that's in there. Like, because you mentioned the defense that we had, you look at the midfield, like, you had O'Driscoll and Darcy, two guys massively experienced, and would have a lot of, I suppose, they would have seen this Australian defense or this Australian team a fair few times in the build up to this. They had a lot of experience all over the world, and it's just like, I think that this result, I think, kind of showed what we could do and made the loss to Wales then subsequently all the more disappointing.
I think that as well, you're frustrated, and there's a real sense of cohesion to this Irish team, that they all understand each other. And the only player that you really had missing was probably David Wallace, and at that point you'd managed to blood in Sean O'Brien to fill his place, and that's worked out, hasn't it? So
honestly, David Wallace getting injured in the warm-up against England was just a sickener, because what a player David Wallace was. And, you know, that was a guy who you felt that one for him, because he was quite
about in pain as well. It's a hard man.
Oh, yeah. That was almost the worst part of it. But when you look at the guys who we brought in, that back role, I mean, you just look at the names now, like Heaslip, O'Brien, Ferris. I mean, that could be a Lions back row star, you know. Easily. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, unbelievable players there. And, do you know what? You'd fancy it. I mean, when you look at the Australian back row now, you think, oh, there are some good guys there. Like, Rocky Elsom's a guy. I remember thinking Radiki Samo was, like, an unbelievable player as well.
Yeah.
But
I thought Heaslip, O'Brien, Ferris, that's a very strong back row.
Good unit in it, yeah.
Well, so, Australia, they went into this game with a really bold strategy, talking about the back row. They named a 14 of really talented players, and then they also 13 of Anthony Fanger, and then they also went with a player who had a really specific talent in the way, you know, we're talking about a lot of the backline being multifaceted and having a load of really interesting skills. Because the only thing that Ben McCalman, the flanker, seemed to bring to the table was the fact that he had this one remarkable skill, which is the ability to turn invisible. So he could, at any point, turn himself invisible during a game, and you wouldn't notice he was on the pitch. That was his one real talent, was that he would disappear from sight completely during matches.
I was actually, when I was looking at this, because I went and I just checked up a lot of the players, and he's got something like 54 Australian caps. I can't really, and the thing is, no disrespect to the guy, I can't really remember much of what he did in those games.
That was exactly it. When I heard his name in commentary, because Grant Nisbet said, Ben McCalman, haven't said his name much in the last 10 minutes. And I was like, Ben McCalman, I know that name. Who's Ben McCalman? And I went and checked the team, and he was starting at 7. And just how do you not notice a 7? What happened? Who was he? And to say, because I completely forgot about a guy who won 50 caps. His most recent game was 3 years. He played in 2017.
Really?
He's 22.
Yeah. What?
I think it could be a case that he was a guy at the time who kind of was, you know, maybe pulling up trees as a younger player. He only got his debut the year before. So you look at that and you go, well, look, that I can see a kind of a reason why he would be, you know, because I think I associate Australian rugby a lot with kind of getting younger players into their team quite quickly. And sometimes they come up and they disappear. But you look at a guy like that and you think, I remember watching the game and it just seemed to pass him by. That, like, I know he wasn't mentioned a whole load in it, but like, He just seemed like a non-factor in that game. And like, I've been that guy. Do you know where there's a game? You're on the field, but just like, I may as well be sitting in the stands watching this. I'm supposed to be in the middle of all this.
But it's just, same, by which I mean I've played on the wing.
Yeah, it's going away. Like, as in, it's like, I've had no influence on what's going on here. I'm not going to have an influence. To be honest, I think I'd be better off I'm just going to sail over here. And if the ball comes near me, I'm going to do my best. But it just seemed like where the game just evaded him completely.
Yeah, and it's one of those days. We had 52 of those days.
I mean, the likes of Sean O'Brien coming up to directly against this dude.
Yeah.
Stephen Ferris, like, again, who, again, we're not fully sure if Stephen Ferris is fully human. Yeah, you look at this and you go, that's a tough gig to be popped in next to the likes of these guys. The likes of Ferris, O'Brien, and Heaslip, these guys... head cases, like, you know, especially O'Brien and Ferris. It's a tough gig, and it's not something that I think when you look at a guy like him. I mean, Rocky Elsom is a guy, big reputation, you know, he didn't play all that great in this game either. But like, you look at, you know, that back row, I think, has got a very big argument of being one of the best that Ireland have ever put out. If you just look at individual ability and what they may bring to a sort of a unit.
Yeah, definitely. We'll touch on Stephen Ferris, actually, because there's, I think, really the turning point of the game. Ireland didn't capitalise necessarily, but the point where Will Genier at the back of the scrum picks the ball up, and then Stephen Ferris, in turn, picks Will Genier up. And of course, the phrase the commentator used was that Stephen Ferris picks up Will Genier like a rag doll, and he carries him back 10 yards, and Ireland get the put into the scrum immediately. They didn't actually score from it, but at that point, I think you just kind of knew that the Ireland pack had the better of the Wallabies.
That it's one of those moments where you kind of... As a player for the Australians, looking at that, you have to imagine you're looking at, like, if that happens, you're thinking, we're in for a tough second half here.
Yeah.
That's one of those ones where, like, especially with Ferris, because, like, Ferris, I think, is one of those guys, he's so powerful and so, like his physique, his, like, built for rugby, like, you know? Mm. And so unfortunate that he had to retire so early. But, isn't he was just so powerful for his size and so athletic. You want your guys like that in the field, you want them making big statements like that in that game. So I still remember, like, he was grabbing Genya up like if there was a young lad, he's trying to escape getting into the bat. just like that, driving him forward as if he was going to throw him into the bat. But then you look at, he's got his hand clamped over the ball as well. So it's not going
like a rubber duck.
You kind of get a kind of an idea of Will Genia where you kind of have that kind of record scratch thing halfway through and thinking, you might be wondering how I ended up in this situation. I was a little bit slow taking the ball out of a scrum and got absolutely just driven back. And nobody wants to be on those highlight moments, but that was a big highlight moment in the World Cup from an Irish perspective. Just Stephen Ferris. I can think of a guy I'd rather play against least than Stephen Ferris, and I'm coming up blank on a lot of names. Like, he's just unbelievably powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryce Heem, because I don't really want to catch the coronavirus, but that's about it.
Joe Marler, because I don't really want him having the crack with me, you know, where I don't want
him. I value my testicles. That's a clip that's going to be taken out of context, isn't it?
Yeah.
No way that's happening. The other thing about that moment as well is that Will Genier is the voice of reason in the Australia backline.
Yeah.
That they're all just mad blokes. You know, it's Quade Cooper, it's literally Kirtley Beale, it's James O'Connor, like, and young James O'Connor, who was more of a maverick than he is these days.
I think
when he was kind of freakishly talented, just wanted
a fantastic nickname for him.
Yeah.
Like, literally Kirtley Beale. That could be his autobiography.
Unfortunately, Kirtley Beale. Or fortunately, mixed fortunes, Kirtley Beale. That sums his entire career up. But yeah, Genia was kind of the guy who kept Quade on his leash. You know, he was the guy kind of putting the collar on all the other players and walking them gently. A bit like that meme Glove did of Greg Laidlaw with Finn Russell and Adam Hastings.
He was... With Will Genia, I look at him and I remember my memory of Will Genia at the time. Because, you know, when you go back a number of years, you're just trying to remember what your thoughts were about certain guys. And with Will Genia, he was one of those guys in the Australian team where you're just like, he's a top player. Like, he's a world-class top-end player.
Yeah.
And there was always a worry about what Will Genia would do. Like, and coming into that game, it was a big, you know, like, Will Genia was a big, as much of a focus as the rest of them. I know he's the guy who's kind of going, all right, lads, let's calm down. We're only all out for a quiet night here on the night out. That's Will Genia. But when you look at his ability to, I suppose, massively influence a game from nine, which that's not something that every nine can do. Will Genia is a guy, for me, always. And like, he was still playing up until relatively recently. I remember when he signed for Stade Francais and thinking, geez, they've got a top player there, like Stade Francais now. I'd be looking at them to see what they did, and ultimately didn't really work for him. But like, I think he's a guy. He's still only 32. Like that, he was a fella who was just a real top end player for Australia. And one of the reasons again why I was kind of seesawing on this game, thinking there's no reason why we shouldn't win it. But at the same time, Will Genia, Quade Cooper, like, quality.
Yeah, and it's funny you mention him being like the quiet lad on the night out when his rival for the nine shirt in most of his Australia career was Nick Phipps, who famously at least twice pissed on a bar whilst drunk.
Lads.
Who hasn't done that?
Yeah. I don't know, like, standing on top of the bar and pissing is one of those things that's like, we've all had a nice time, you know, we've all had nights in which we went slightly too far, but standing on top of the bar and pissing takes a special breed.
Yeah. That kicks the night off into something that's going to either go incredibly hilarious or somebody's going to end up behind bars. I think if it's at the point where you're actually actively pissing on the bar, that's kind of one of those ones where, okay, we're either all going to go back to the hotel and this is going to be great, or we're going to have to bail somebody out.
Yeah. And how does he even get to that point? Like, how does he climb on top of the bar, have a moment in which he unzips, and no one's got him down and stopped him before he can... And, like, I don't want to go into mechanics too much, but, like, is there a moment in which he stops and has to, like, ready, gather himself before he begins? This is the analysis we got you on for, Tom.
Yeah.
This is the...
I've Nick Phipps down as one of those people that the rest of the team can basically just make him do anything because they look down on him so heavily on rugby respect that he feels really insecure and a lot not out would do anything to, you know, gain the respect of Kirtley Beale and James O'Connor.
I just there's an incredibly uncomfortable moment where you're somebody who's in range to stop him from doing it and you make eye contact with him right as he's about to unzip. And in that moment, you're either going to, well, I'm going to jump up and stop you there now, Nick, and stop you from doing this. Or you're just going to just watch him doing it while making eye contact with him. I think it's just a very uncomfortable situation for the guy who's in that radius. And I would like to think that it was Ben McCallman looking up at him going, you know what, Nick, I'm just going to sit this one out. And he did the same then for the Australian-Ireland game. It was cool.
He begins... Nick Phipps begins peeing, and for some reason it's just hitting some invisible object and dropping down. He can't work out, like, the trajectory of his piss until he kind of walks over and starts feeling it. And Ben McCallman's turned invisible, because it happens whenever he's scared. And it happened in this match when he saw Stephen Ferris pre-match and kind of went, oh, shit, lads. Broop! Nope, he's gone. He's invisible. Ben's disappeared.
This is where we find out that the Australian Fines Committee was Ben McCallman and Anthony Fainga, and therefore just people could just do what they want on a night out.
Yeah.
I tell you, though, you look at, like, the... Like, again, Sean O'Brien and Stephen Ferris. Like, very good players across... And you look at the Welsh back row coming up on that in that quarter-final. Again... Unbelievable players there as well, like, you know, Warburton and Lydiate and Faletau. Again, I think Warburton could still be playing. Lydiate and Faletau certainly are as well. But again, you look at that Australian back row and now you can kind of go, well, yeah, I can see why Ireland won that game. That Ireland's back five in that game with O'Connell and O'Callaghan as well. That is, again, it's,
And
it stacks up well.
There's a great moment of just sheer niggle with Donoghue O'Callaghan that I loved, where he at one point races in like the moment Genya picks the ball up from, you know, a few meters away and grabs him by the ankles, just kind of wraps around, like doesn't really make an impact but stops him moving, and then he just hangs on to him for a solid few seconds past the ruck being set up and just clings on, and Genya's turning to the referee pointing to him, and the referee just kind of gestures to like, well, you can just step out of it. You know, you can just get on with it. He's not really doing anything. He's just lying there being slightly annoying. And that was kind of what O'Callaghan did. You know, he kind of made a career out of being slightly annoying.
You look at Donoghue O'Callaghan, like, as in, and I went through a period there a couple of years ago where I think it was 3 weekends in a row, I was parked in the same parking building as Donoghue O'Callaghan in Cork, where you walk in and there's Donoghue O'Callaghan going to his car again. And you're just like, there's Donoghue O'Callaghan. And it's like, you go back then the next week, there's Donoghue O'Callaghan again. It's like, are we on a loop? Are we on the same track here?
Do you have any mundane details about like what kind of air freshener he had or anything like that?
Well, he had a nice car and he always had a really good tan. His tan game was always really good. And even when he, not just when he was playing, when he was out and about shopping around in Cork City, great tan. And
was he always wearing shorts?
Hmm?
Was he always wearing his shorts?
No, and he was kind
of.
I think
he was ripping them off in the style of that match and trying to play without them? Yeah.
Apparently, he doesn't like that at all. he's a guy he's got a great sense of humor. He presents radio over here now.
Okay.
But he, you know, I think it was brought up before, and he doesn't actually like it about the whole red underpants thing. And it was just like, he was just eager to play. And no, you must have shorts when you play. But it was like, he's a guy who is just unbelievably sound. Like, as in, yeah, whenever I've met him, like, I've met him twice. And he was, because there was the guys down the car park where you're just sort of like, you know, when you kind of, you notice the person that you've noticed before. Like, yeah, it's a bit like when you kind of bump into a friend of yours in the supermarket. And then when you kind of go, okay, well, look, we'll see you later. And then you meet them again a few miles later.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like lifting your eyebrows at them. Here we are. And it was a bit like that.
I had that quite recently with someone I used to work with who was legally registered as blind. They're partially sighted, but it was, you know, that lovely person and lovely to run into them again. But it was quite useful in that next instance to know that they hadn't seen that we'd just done that awkward thing. That's not as funny a story as I thought it was going to be. I thought that was a funny thing. And I've just realized actually that doesn't, I don't come out of that well. Okay. Never mind. That person, Ben McCowman.
Yeah. I always get the impression watching Lines DVDs and stuff that I always really liked Donald O'Callaghan, and I always got the impression he's a really sound bloke. And he's one of those people that I think watching back how he was on the tour, just like as a tourist, I suppose, is what I'm saying, is what gave him the midweek captaincy in the 09 Lions tour.
Like, he's a guy who sometimes, when you look at, because, you know, like whenever I've been abroad, like, and, you know, people know I'm a Munster supporter or whatever, like, They rattle off the names, like O'Gara, O'Connell, all these guys. And O'Callaghan, I suppose, I think if it wasn't for O'Connell, he'd be looked at in much greater terms, I suppose, than what he is. Like, as in, he's a test lion. He's won a Grand Slam. He's won Heineken Cups. He played until he was, like, very, very late into his career. He had a massive amount of caps. And, like, as in, he ended up captaining Worcester, I think, after he left Munster. I just think he's a quality player, a guy who just did the basics incredibly well. As in, his jumping at the front of the lineup was incredibly good. He could take the top off the ball very well there. A guy, good, great work rate in defence. His fitness and professionalism and preparation. Like, he doesn't drink at all and has never drank. He is a guy who maximized absolutely everything about himself, I'd say. And, like, in that regard, he's a huge example, I suppose, to any sort of professional at all as to how to get the absolute most out of your career. Do not go, Callahan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I think that's it, because he's often just thought of as Paul O'Connell's mate when he was such a serious player. And similar, like, you know, it's the same thing Gordon Darcy had to deal with the whole way of being Brian O'Driscoll's mate. And, you know, like, to an extent, Backy's Bota, had it not been... Maybe he just started doing all the indiscipline to stand out so that he didn't fall into that trap of being Victor Matfield's mate.
That's
sometimes that happens with, like, really established combinations. So.
Tell you what, though, add Backy's Bota to the list of the fellas you'd never ever want to play against.
Yes.
Yes.
God in heaven.
Yeah. Oh, top of the list, frankly.
He's like a Bond villain, but he just plays in the second row.
It's a similar calling, I think. Like, Bond, perhaps like henchman and South African second row. Just,
if you made a 15 of Bond villains, I'm pretty sure they'd all play second row.
Yeah.
Jaws would be in the second row. Wait, Odd Job would be the hooker.
Yeah. He's kind of the exception that proves the rule, isn't he? Though, oh no, Javier Bardem has two caps for Spain.
Does
and
he?
And has been a Bond villain. Yeah. Javier Bardem played back row for Spain.
No.
He's the only person... Yeah, yeah. He's the only person to ever play international rugby and win an Oscar.
What a coincidence that is that brought that up.
Yeah.
That's mad.
And he's a Bond villain. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He said something like, being a rugby player in Spain is like being a matador in Ireland. You know, he then named some other country. And literally the word island is in front of me right now. So that came to mind. But yeah, he loved rugby for a long time. And then he sort of gave it up to focus on his acting career.
That's incredible.
Which went okay for him, I think. You know, yeah. I think in the end that worked out.
Goldfinger would be the director of rugby. Jake White would also be in the running for that job, but ultimately
okay, Gary Blofeld at 10. Oh, nice. Nice. Blofeld at 10.
I would look at, yeah, as a, I think Jaws would be in the second role. Look, I can't get into this because I'm only going to be thinking about, like, as in a James Bond 15 of James Bond villains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a film podcast, so.
It's been remarkably light on the film chat today.
We sometimes talk about rugby, but...
Yeah, rugby's optional. Yeah. Rugby's optional. So, I came up with a game that is not James Bond related.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if either of you listened to Grant Nisbet's commentary on this game.
Sure did.
You did. Okay. Now, I have always had my thoughts of Grant Nisbet as a commentator. You know, perfectly good voice, calls the game, etc. But he does have this habit of whenever he commentates on a team that isn't the All Blacks or sometimes Australia, yeah, maybe the Springboks, depending on the year, he has a habit of always looking down at his team sheet. And you can sort of hear him calling, and that's a great break by Bo, and then kind of glancing back up. You know, he's not that familiar with Northern Hemisphere rugby. He clearly doesn't follow it. You know, during that, like, 2007 or the final in this year in the 2011 World Cup, you could hear him constantly looking down and going, "Deux à trois," and then he'd pause and he'd look down again a minute later to say who made the next tackle. And
it was also deux à trois.
Yeah.
It's a bit like a bad name announcement in those old rugby games.
Yes.
There was one I always remember from, was it 2008 or before it, it was for Ben Cohen, because he was like one of the best players in this game, whichever version of the game was. And like whenever he'd get the ball, it'd be just like, "Kerwin," and it would be in that tone all the time, regardless of where he got the ball or how. It was like, "Great tackle by Kerwin." It feels like this guy commentating does. It's kind of the same thing because he has to sort of look and go, "And that's a great, great bit of work there by Johnny Sexton." I'm not sure how you pronounce this.
Looks just a Marshall for help. Now, on the 2011 Rugby World Cup game, which me and Robbie still play, pretty much 80% of the time we're together, we're playing that game. But for Vincent Clair's name on there, they didn't bother recording it, and they just have the word "clear" for, like, when a player is clear. And they just have that line of commentary. And for Jacques Ferry, they have "free" as well.
It's funny you should mention Vincent Clair, because the year before this, the 2010 IRB Try of the Year, or it might have been actually earlier than that, it might have been 2009, about this period anyway, the Try of the Year was given to Cedric Haymore, but it was Grant Nisbet commentating, and the whole way he is shouting, "What a run by Vincent Clair! Vincent Clair!" And it's not Vincent Clair. Like, he's not the player scoring this brilliant try. And that was the Try of the Year, and all the official clips have it being awarded to the wrong player on the commentary, because that was Grant Nisbet.
I've done commentary, and I used to have a healthy disrespect for guys making mistakes on commentary, until I did commentary myself on the radio, and you become extremely aware that you are live on the radio or whatever to however many people are listening, and it's not like a podcast where if you mess up you can just pause and you know, go back and redo it. You're live. And I must have sworn, I don't know how many times on this radio broadcast, on a Munster game that I was commentating on, where I thought it was off air, and people could see, we could hear you saying, "Oh shit," off the, on the mic. But on this one, so I have a lot of respect for the co-coms and the guys doing commentary now, because I've been that guy. And it's like I know people say I talk a lot of bollocks anyway, but when you've got a live mic in front of your face, the urge to talk bollocks, it just comes out of you.
Yeah.
I remember I said one line during it that where I'm not sure who scored, the opposition scored anyway, and I was just like, Munster won't be very happy with that. And it's just like, oh really? Yeah. Won't be very happy having conceded a try. Great, good one.
I remember doing, when I was in uni, I did the coverage of our varsity, which I didn't go to Oxford or Cambridge, you know, I went to the University of Derby, and our varsity was a very low-key affair, but one year we tried to try and live stream and make a big deal out of it. So basically, they would throw over to an event and we'd have, like, sports journalism-type students kind of commentating on it. And then for some reason, had me and you know, my friend who I'd done stuff with. God, that could mean anything. But we were sort of presenting it, and, like, I remember, as you say, just that overwhelming urge to talk bollocks when they go, okay, we've got half an hour, we need you to just fill, then we'll throw into the badminton. And after about 10 minutes, you get slightly tired and you start to run out of things to say. And there's only so many times they can throw up the scores until I remember, and I don't know why this is the bit that stuck with me, and you just saying that there reminded me of this. It came back in like a cold sweat that I caught myself saying that we're going over to badminton, and I realised we still had like a minute before we went over. So I just said, what a game, badminton, what a game. And then just began to fill from there and try and describe badminton was to beginners. If you've never seen badminton, because badminton was the only thing Derby was good at. So there was a, again, they brought me back in the year after I graduated, by which point I started Squid Rugby, and it hadn't properly taken off by now, but like I'd had the Conor Murray video, and I think it was just before the Sam Warburton one, so like it had grown to quite a level, you know, but it was a cult thing rather than being whatever it is, I don't even know what it is now. And it was, they asked me if I could come back in and do some of the stuff, and there was one of the comments when they went to the live feed of the rugby, where it just said, like, why have you brought Squid Rugby in but not had him cover the rugby? And people were saying, like, what does this mean? What's Squid Rugby? Because none of them had any idea, kind of. They knew me as the idiot we got in when he was in second year, rather than understand the game and very, very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you say you have a game prepared for us?
Yeah, I had a game prepared for us.
Sure.
Right, okay. So, I started a box out in the side of my notes. Now, regular listeners may be aware, I've been covering how many times Nottingham-born commentator Martin Gilliam mentions Nottingham over the course of this World Cup. I think we're currently at 14 over four games. This is a new category called Names Grant Nisbet Gets Wrong.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I'm going to read you a name, and I want you to tell me whether that is a name he called the player or one I've just made up.
Okay.
Okay.
How are we doing this? We're doing this competitively, taking it in turns.
What do you think? What do you want to do? Do you want to work as a team, discuss it, or do you want to compete for this? There is no prize.
If there's no prize, I don't want to fight over it.
Okay.
I don't want to fight you, Will.
Okay.
Yeah.
You are the first person to ever say that.
Yeah. No stand up and fight. That's just.
I just think I'm a little bit too tired for standing up today. I'll just sit down and just take it easy.
It's not quite.
Sit down and take it easy till you hear the bell.
Oh man. Okay, we'll work together.
Put toe in slipper. Okay.
Yeah, we'll work as a team.
Okay. The referee for this game was, of course, Bryce Lawrence. Did Grant Nisbet call him Keith Lawrence three times?
Yes, he did. I'm going to say.
He did, yes.
Yeah, he did at least once. So, I'm willing to go with that.
He called him Keith Lawrence three times. Apparently, Keith is his dad's name. New Zealand's a small country, mate. I don't know. Okay, next one. Patrick O'Connell, Ireland second row.
Patrick O'Connell. A part of me is thinking that that's almost too cliched for him to actually have said.
Yeah, I think O'Connell's one of the three players he will have heard of.
Because, again, this is one of the things, when you go down to New Zealand and you speak to people down there, you get a real straightener pretty quickly as to how many Irish players they know, and it is not many. So I think
I think
that is not true. I think he would know Paul O'Connell.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on so far, 2 out of 2. it does remind me of sitting next to a Kiwi fan in the 2015 World Cup.
Oh, yes.
And him listing Stephen Jones as being like a really obscure hipster player, like the, you know, the incumbent Wales 10 for the last how many of the years, as a real like, hipster player that he knew that he was a big fan of.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Next one, Rodney Heaslip. Rodney Heaslip. Did Grant Nisbet at one point call the island number 8 Rodney Heaslip?
Well, you look at Jamie Heaslip, you go, there's an E at the end of his first name. Oh, but he's probably one of the owners of one of the greatest tweets ever. Jamie yes. With his podcast tweet.
Yeah.
Want to start a podcast? No.
That's why we didn't ask anybody if we should start a podcast. We just went with it.
No, we only asked Jamie Heaslip.
I think it's actually quite possible.
I think it's possible.
Heaslip.
Yeah.
Like, as in, because I remember with Jamie Heaslip in New Zealand, he did give an old, you know, because for a while up here, he was called Jamie Neeslip because he drove, you know, that knee into the back of McCaw. So I think maybe he's got a bit of an accident. So I'm thinking that he did call him Rodney Heaslip.
I'm willing to go with you on that. Yeah.
You're absolutely spot on. Rodney Heaslip was...
Rodney Heaslip?
Exactly what Grant Nisbet called him.
Rodney Heaslip.
Rodney. So I Googled Rodney Heaslip and it comes up with a man from New Zealand who died in 2014, age 53. So I don't know if it's just he had a friend called Rodney Heaslip and
Maybe he knew him.
He knew Rodney Heaslip and he went, well, now he's a number 8 for Ireland. I guess that makes sense that my friend is now playing international rugby.
When I listened to this game, I was listening to it with the RTE commentary on it, Hugh Cahill and Donal Lennon. I told you this, I think, on my old podcast, but I'm going to mention it here again about how one way of where I get completely un-big-timed when I was commentating on a rugby game in Musgrave Park and somebody tapped me on the shoulder and I was thinking, oh, it's a fan coming to give me a, you know, looking for an autograph or something or a photo because somebody has asked me to do that before. So I was just like, oh, brilliant. So I turn around and it turns out he was just leaning on me to get to Donal Lenehan, who played for the Lions and played for the and was just literally using me as a stand so he could easily put that in his face to sign it. My God. You thought you had a fan. And it's just like, no, he was using you as a guardrail.
I had, when I was in, it was the Wales Barbars game last year, and I'd had, Will was there as well with me, but we'd had a number of people had asked me for photos and asked like what I did and so on.
You are underselling that. Literally, I went to the toilet, you waited outside for me for, you know, a minute, I came back and there was a queue of people waiting to meet you.
Did this happen in Cork? With me? I was in my hometown. And there was a dude in the bar that we were at. He's just like, oh, you squidge rugby. And I was just like, what?
Yeah, and I did. I said to him, like, do you know the Free Red Kings? Do you know that on Twitter? He was like, no. I think I've heard of them. I was like, no, you want to meet him. He's more interesting. He's
the biggest kick in the teeth.
He's local.
For that Wales Barbars game was when somebody asked for a photo with you and asked me to take it. And I was like, oh, you're joking.
No. So there was a point. There was a point late on where someone asked me for a photo and they just wanted me to take a photo of them with their girlfriend in the Millennium Stadium. And I caught on pretty quickly, but that very easily could have gone very badly after the day I'd had.
Yeah.
I once saw, this is just a tangent on it, but one of the funniest things I've ever seen was a couple that was sightseeing in Nottingham for whatever reason, asked for a photo outside the kind of big town hall and they asked some young person like if they can take a photo of them, and the person just went and took it and went and took a selfie with them. It was very funny. Anyway, speaking of very funny, did Grant Nisbet. I did that exactly. I proved his point. Did he call the Australian 10 Craig Cooper?
No. I think Craig Cooper's... He was public enemy number one in New Zealand at this point. I think he was too big time to be known as Craig.
I think that he could have misspoken and said Craig Cooper quite easily. Because it's something that I have almost done on this very podcast. So it's just like, I think it's possible just because it's an easy name to slot in. So I'm gonna fight Will on this one.
Okay. You're going to stand up and fight.
I'm going to sit down here. I'm going to fight on this computer. It's, I'm going to say he said it, but he misspoke.
I've been overruled. Go on.
Okay. You're spot on, Tom. You're spot on. He slipped up. He said Craig Cooper, then corrected himself to Quaid. Okay. Did he just call the Irish winger Tom Bow? Instead of Tommy, even Thomas John. Just Tom Bow.
Tom Bow.
It's really, normally when he's picking a name, it's a Tom Bowler. So there's a...
It seems like an off-brand Rambo.
Yeah. The thing is, Tommy Bow rolls off the tongue so well. Hence, Tommy Bow, everybody in commentary says. So Tom Bow just seems unnatural.
Yeah, that doesn't seem... I would lean that didn't happen, I would say.
Yeah.
Because I think Tommy Bow, you know, Tommy Bow, it's fun to say, it's fun to remember. Yeah.
He does indeed say Tom Bow. He at one point just shouts, Tom Bow! And like, what are you doing?
Tom Bow!
That just sounds
as
wrong.
A bonus.
I just remembered, on the RTE commentary for this game is Hugh Cahill, a guy who's still doing commentary for RTE for the rugby and stuff like that. During the warm-up to the last World Cup, Ireland were playing at home against Italy. Mm. And I had a gimmick for years, well, not years, when Joey Carberry moved over to Munster, about how he had always been from Munster and that he was just coming back to this place where he was born and raised. And just basically, it was a kind of a little irritant. And it started off because it was so obviously fake that it must be funny. And there's varying levels of humour. But it made it onto an RTE broadcast when Hugh Cahill said Munster's own Joey Carberry in the halfbacks live on air. And it was just like, this is the best crossover ever.
Did you ever get to the bottom of that? Was it... Were they buying into the joke, or did they think is actually...
Oh, they were buying into the joke.
Yeah, no, I'm glad.
We had Cammy Black from the Scottish Rugby Podcast on here. He was saying that they managed to convince a load of people that Nick Haining was an ex-ballet professional when he first started playing for Scotland. And eventually Nick Haining had to come out and publicly like refute that information.
Because it ended up in The Guardian and so on. Go on.
I've got one thing for this as well. Where I've been trying to make out that Josh van der Fleer is a project player for many years. And it's like every single time I get it, you would think at this point that like, look, obviously it's a joke, but I still get people trying to earnestly correct me, kind of going, no, he's actually from Wicklow in Ireland. It's like, no, he's from Johannesburg, where I am also from because I am South African as well. And it's just like, I will retire if that ever gets on RTE or on any TV. At that point, I'll just close everything down and just be okay, look, I'm done.
I had this conversation watching the Ireland-Scotland game in a pub in Japan that someone loudly went, when he came off the bench, oh, Josh van der Fleer, that famous Irishman. And I said, yeah, he was born in Dublin. And then he was like really adamant, shouting me, no, he's not. And I got up his Wikipedia page and showed him, yeah, he's born in Wicklow, as you say.
It happened.
Thankfully, I hadn't gotten to that yet before I edited it.
In the Australia-Italy game in the World Cup that we did the episode on, there was a point when the commentator said, oh, yeah, there's an Italian lying on the wrong side of the ball. And then the other commentator says, I think it was Phil Kearns, says, oh, no, it wasn't Italian, it was Paul Derbyshire. And then the other commentator then says, Paul Derbyshire, both of his parents born in Italy.
It's like his granddad. So he...
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. What a turnout for the books that one is. Phil Kearns being wrong. Okay. I'll do two more questions quickly.
Sure.
And then we'll move on. Josh Horwell. Does he call the Australian lock Josh Horwell?
I could see him doing that. Well, no,
I could see him doing that.
Yeah, I could see him. I know he's the Australian captain, I think.
Yeah, he's newly the captain, though. So I think he's still getting used to him.
Yeah, I think he did call him Josh.
Yeah.
You finally got one wrong. Oh. You've finally fallen into my cunning trap. I'm afraid.
Lambs. Damn.
Yes. And last one. Did he call the Irish number 12 Gordon O'Darcy?
Oh, that definitely happened. Absolutely. That definitely happened. There is no world in which that didn't happen.
That happened. Yeah. He called him Gordon O'Darcy. The best thing is that because the Darcy, the D, there's an apostrophe between the D and the A, so he's got two apostrophes in a row. So he's O apostrophe D apostrophe RC.
Oh, but like, there's guys like one fella who was consistently called Tom Ass by a lot of like English commentators, Tomas O'Leary. Monster. People calling him Tom Ass. And it's just like, lads, that's not what he's fucking called. Yeah. Oh, it's Tom Ass O'Leary. Oh, there was another one as well. It's some guys kind of garbled, they used to garble Dunica as well.
Okay, yeah. I
was calling him Dunaka.
I'm surprised how many people got Owen Redden's name right. Mm. And he wasn't Eoin Redden ever.
Eoin?
That never happened. Eoin Reading.
Oh, no, but there's some Irish names. They're kind of mainly girls' names that I'm glad I haven't seen rugby commentators garble as of yet. Like, so Grania, Saoirse, like, they do not look anything like, when you look at them, they look nothing like got into it, like, there's been a big battle between Irish people and John Cleese as of late over that stuff.
When I was in Dublin, I met a group of kind of lads in a pub in whatever, because that's the kind of lad I am.
That's
exactly.
They don't pee on the bar.
But basically, no, gutted. Basically, they all listened to Blood and Mud, and I'd mentioned, actually, I've been asked to be on this week. And so I said I'd give them a shout out, and I went to write the names down just in case. And one of them was called Donal, and I spelt his name right, and they all lost their minds that they thought that someone raised outside Ireland could spell it properly.
Was it the one with the MH?
Yeah. Spelt Donal Gleeson. So I was able, why I was able to get it, you know, because of
that. That's a good flex for a non-Irish person to come in and just like bang, whap it out. Donal spelt right with the MH.
Yeah. There's the only names I can do are Donal and Saoirse, but you know, there you go. There.
Just mic dropped your pen.
Yeah. It felt a bit like that. It was probably like that gif of the guy in the hoodie and everyone behind him losing their mind.
Yeah.
It felt a bit like that. I've lost track of where we're going with this. Does anyone have anything else? We haven't talked about the game that much.
Loads talk about the game, yeah.
I know.
Should we very quickly go over some points?
Cool. Yeah, go on.
I mean, the first one is, in the first couple of minutes, Ireland get a penalty inside their own 22. Johnny Sexton taps it and they go quickly. Should we just briefly talk about that statement of intent? Bo then kicks down the sideline. Tom Bo then kicks down the sideline.
Yeah.
They did something similar in the what would have been the Grand Slam game that year against England.
Yes.
Where they take the quick tap and eventually leads to Tommy Bo's try. It was something they sort of did in that Kidney era, was they would kind of take, as a bluff, you know, to keep teams aware. Sexton would take quick taps.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the time, like, there was such a big difference between how Johnny Sexton would play at 10 and how Ronan O'Gara had played at 10 up until that point. And at that point in his career, Ronan O'Gara was heading into his kind of mid-30s. You know, he retired in 2013, I believe, 2 years later. So it's like, he was in the tail end of his career, but like, as in, still, I think, quite effective at what Ronan O'Gara did. But I think that a lot of what Ireland would look to try to do under Kidney was to try and change up some of that, to change up some of the, I think, the patterns that people had become accustomed to with Ireland. Because, you know, we'd look at Ireland, we'd go, when O'Gara got possession on a penalty, you're driving that down. The idea of a quick tap just, again, was alien, did not happen.
Should talk about when O'Gara came on. That, again, felt like a bit of a turning point because suddenly Ireland had that extra sense of control. Came on for Darcy and Sexton moved to the centre. First thing O'Gara does is puts a kick from his own 22 over the opposition 10-metre line. And then Sexton misses a penalty and O'Gara hits the next two penalties perfectly. And Ireland go 15-6 up.
You look at that moment, actually, O'Gara and Sexton playing at the same time. That was a thing that, I think, in Ireland anyway, was sort of like, whoa. Wait, you could do that?
Yeah.
Because it was a bit like kind of accidentally discovering kind of, you know, like chocolate and peanut butter. It's like, what? It was really good. And I look at, I think that Sexton and, but again, you look at it and you go, there's O'Driscoll and Darcy who are, you know, top players. Mm. And then looking to try and move Sexton into 12 where he could certainly play there. And he could play there now. He could play in the back row now the way he looks at the moment. But like, look at, like that aspect of Ireland's play, and you almost gave you the best of both worlds in some ways. And I think when you look at the quarter final against Wales, that he went with O'Gara to start with Sexton on the bench, as opposed to maybe going with what might have worked, which is Sexton at 10 or Sexton at 12, O'Gara at 10, and it was seen as being a regressive move at the time.
Yeah,
but after that game, after the Australia game, like, you look at, you know, Ireland against Russia or Ireland against Italy, like, O'Gara did play really well. And there was an argument that it was a form decision. But I think that I'm not sure if it was the correct decision, when I think you could possibly play them both at the same time, because I think it would give you a way of playing that I think we only saw glimpses of in that last half of the, or the when O'Gara came on in the kind of the latter half of that Australia game.
It stinks at the thing England would do every World Cup year post 2003 until last year, which was to kind of develop this really sexy attacking game in the lead up to a World Cup, and then bin it all off entirely and go for a really conservative brand of rugby.
Exactly.
So, like, they dropped... Toby Flood was in the form of his life, been brilliant in the Six Nations. They won the Six Nations with Flood at 10. They drop him, bring Wilkinson in for the World Cup, and it goes horribly wrong. 4 years later, you know, George Ford first comes in, and they're playing Farrell at 12, and it's a really interesting axis. Drop him, Farrell goes to 10, and they start just crashing the ball up. And it was just, you know, 2007, similar thing happening, with just them resorting back to Wilkinson. And it just became the thing England did. And Ireland kind of went, well, that's how... They've gone to semi-finals before. We should try that. We should do what they do.
We all know that Wilkinson's world-class, but he didn't suit the game plan that England had spent the last 12 months building up to play in the World Cup.
I think there's an argument, though, that a lot of coaches and directors of rugby, when they come into big tournaments, that you look at a kind of an expansive style of game. And I think when you look at tournaments in tournament format, you think, well, teams are never really punished for going conservative. So maybe if we kind of maybe narrow our game a little bit, and to do that, you might need a kind of a guy who's going to truck it up for you at 12. Maybe we'll just revert to that. And then because we know we can attack, we can do this. We can only can play the way we've been playing, but let's maybe tighten it up a little bit. I think that's always an instinct that's there with coaches, to try and go, well, expansion is working good for us, but now it's the World Cup, or now it's a knockout game. So now we have to go and play knockout rugby, which is, look, South Africa to a certain extent kind of narrowed their game to an extent where they wanted to maximize their strengths and did so very, very well. But you look at other teams that maybe don't have the resources that South Africa do, or the ability to play that style of game that South Africa do, and maybe nobody else in the world does, and think maybe tightening it up for knockout rugby isn't always the best option.
I'll always admire Argentina in 2015 for doing exactly the opposite of having quite a tight game, and then suddenly just going, bam, no, we're going to offload, you know, as Rhiannon put it the other week, why, hello, gentlemen, you know, we're just going to offload absolutely everything. Well,
that's the thing. I think the Pumas, actually, in that 2015 World Cup, were like, I just have a general dislike of the Argentinian national team anyway.
I wonder why.
Despite of this goes back many, many years, but it actually goes back to a game in 2009 it was a game in Croke Park anyway, where Ireland were playing Argentina. And there was some mouthy Argentinian who was sitting next to us the entire time in that game. And I've had it in for Argentina ever since, even before all the other kind of on-field spite that was there. You know, so there was that. But, you know, you look at Argentina in the 2015 World Cup, my God, they were good to watch. And I think the Che Guevara's last year were incredibly good in Super Rugby. And I think it's a bit of a shame now if they end up getting, I suppose, dropped out of that tournament just because of circumstance. But I really liked what they were doing, and like, they showed how complete that game could be for Argentina. And again, I hope Argentina do, because I think I love having a kind of a spiteful Argentina who are kind of a rival to everybody. And I think that, it'd be good if they got back to that level of competence, because they didn't really look like themselves at the World Cup for some reason.
No. And I think a lot of that was Ledesma. I just think he's been overpromoted, which is kind of awful to say, but I don't think he's a head coach yet anyway, because he kind of had one season as Jaguars head coach.
He's a good coach.
Oh, absolutely.
In his technicality, in his remit of, I think at the moment he's still a unit coach, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. And I think that, because I think I've, again, been educated very recently of the complexity of managing an entire team and as a director of rugby and driving training, driving, what your overall pattern and style is going to be. It's so difficult. And that's why I understand why some coaches think, you know what, we'll simplify, and then end up almost kind of taking away what was their unique strength to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I remember Danny Wilson saying when he was with the Blues, the reason he went to join Scotland as a forwards coach was because he hated how much admin became the job. You know, was he was used to just actually coaching on the field, and then he became a head coach at Cardiff Blues, and suddenly it was all just admin and just sorting out signings and sitting in an office, and he spent more time in an office than on a pitch. And I wonder whether there's a level.
Players, and it's just like, I want to play, and you're just like, trying to figure out a space room. It's just like, and then trying to figure out, am I going to lie to this guy, or am I going to tell him that I don't have any plans for him, and then have to deal with all that situation? It's just so complex.
Yeah. We've gone massively off topic.
Yeah.
I could continue with that. But
very final point on the game is about the Tommy Bowe interception.
Yes.
Meant to go, which probably is the thing that the game is most remembered for. And we're an hour and a half into this and we've just brought it up. But Quay Cooper flicks it behind his back, 5 metres out from the Ireland trial, and maybe looks like they could score from an overlap. Tommy Bowe intercepts it, goes 90 yards. James O'Connor.
No, could that...
Yeah, go on.
That pass is never wrong from Quay Cooper.
No,
I remember
the
Bowe intercepting. I remember James O'Connor catching him just like a yard out from the try line and putting him into touch. That was the stuff I remembered. I didn't remember the fact it comes from Quade Cooper turning his back to his attackers and flicking it out the back of his hand.
Yeah,
in a stupid pass that isn't going to anyone. There's two Irish defenders that could have picked it off. In the end, it's Tommy Bowe, but he's got competition for that ball. Like, it's close to Ireland players and Australian players. It's stupid. And he's generally, Quade Cooper, I think, has quite a good game on the whole.
Yeah.
But actually...
That moment was one of those things where, again, massive nerves at that point. Because, again, you're visualising, this is Ireland, Australia are probably going to score here. And, you know, especially when it comes up to that, to like that close, that late in the game, and to see Quade, like, that's Quade Cooper. Like,
I mean, yeah.
That's part of what makes him a great player, I think, but also what has held him back at times, which is just, that is just not the pass. You'd be better off putting your head down and trucking it up into contact, to be honest. And it's like, it's just one of those things where, if Ireland had scored that, I think it would have been an unfair reflection on the game as a whole if he had knocked that scored that try. I think that would have maybe put a little bit of an unfair tint in it. I think Ireland, in the game overall, I think, used our size and I think our kind of our physical advantage, I think, quite well. And kind of, I suppose, drove the game into areas where we were able to take advantage. I look at Sexton's drop goal, for example.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the ugliest drop goals I've ever seen
scored. Yeah, that's what I've got taken.
Well taken, but it was bought ugly. Like,
I
drove it low and just skidded over the bar.
I'd rather some really appealing looking drop goals that went wider awarded than that one.
Yeah. It's just one of those ones like, it counts or whatever else, but like, as in, maybe it should only be 2 points.
It was kind of like
rugby league style, 1 point.
It's like Leo Cullen doesn't look the best, but does the job.
Sure.
Although, if Leo Cullen's listening, I retract that comment because I'm willing to fight Tom, but not Leo Cullen.
let's go.
Yeah,
let's go.
Yeah.
So we
tickets
have
to the fight are on sale now.
Let the range of straightener. So,
shall we move on, Robbie, to the closing sections?
I'm just quickly looking at any other notes I've got.
Okay.
I mean, I'd completely forgotten the game ends with a disallowed try by Conor Murray.
Yes.
Who is going for his emo phase at the time.
Yeah. Hell of a step.
A lot of controversy about him being brought even at the time. We've seen as sort of the, former Munster coach bringing this guy I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And he ended up having a pretty decent World Cup, actually. Because Tomás O'Leary, if you think about it, Tomás O'Leary was the guy who started he was a big player in the Grand Slam team in 2009. Yeah. But then an injury that summer kind of just wrecked his career to an extent. He never really got back to that level where he was, unfortunately. Because I think he was a very good player. But Conor Murray just kind of came on then and just like, well, now Conor Murray is a thing.
Yeah, well, O'Leary was selected for the Lions and then got injured, you know. Like,
I was
think
at that
it
day.
Was... Wow. Because it was like 2 days later, wasn't it? It was like the squad's name was Thursday. He was injured on the Saturday or something.
Nick Williams started that game for Munster and was unplayable. And
it was that game, the hat trick game. Yeah. Yes, I remember it. Yeah,
on the table. And Tomas O'Leary, I remember at the time, because I was on pretty low down onto the pitch, and it was just horrific. It was just awful. Yeah. He was coming off. He was in a world of pain. And I think Gerry Flannery got an injury as well in and around that time that prevented him from touring in 2009 as well. So, yeah, it was tough for those guys.
Yeah. Alan Quinlan did the thing that he did that stopped him touring as well.
There was that thing, yes.
That thing that happened.
The alleged incident.
It was almost the perfect thing for Alan Quinlan's career, was to get selected for a Lions tour but be banned for dirty play and not make it. It summed up who he was.
I know what he did was wrong or whatever. I felt so bad for him. Because it was just like, at his age, he was what? He was 35, 36?
Yeah.
On that tour would have been super, but it was just like, not to be. Like, it was just a moment of madness.
Absolutely. I'm just looking for if I have any other notes. Oh, there's one point in which Ireland have just the world's biggest blindside. And, you know, they kind of make like a half bust. World's biggest blindside. Like, there's no one on one side of the post for Australia. Tommy Bowe on his own. One wide ball and he scores. They completely ignore it. They don't bother. Got that jotted down. I've also got jotted down that in Bryce Lawrence, the referee's accent, the words lost forward sound a bit like Ross Ford. So after
I got this from
Australia knock it on.
When we play rugby challenge, it sounds like he says Ross Ford all the time.
It sounds like he's just celebrating a 98 billion cap Scottish hooker.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say 98 is an exaggeration and realise he's got like 15 caps more than that. What does that say about Scottish rugby?
Or David McCalmond. He's got like 54 caps. I thought he got like 50 more caps than what I ever thought he had. I mean, Jesus.
How did that happen? I think I've actually covered everything roughly I have written down. That's incredible.
Yeah.
To be fair, we have been going for an hour and a half. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for putting up with this, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else have any other business?
I'm 90% here, you see. It's the meds, so it's good.
Yeah.
I just don't mean it.
Yeah. That sounds like Kitley Beale. Any other business before we move on to the closing section?
I'm happy to move.
Cool. Okay. I realise, Tom, I didn't mention this, that we do a Man of the Match and Dick of the Day.
You always forget this.
Each game. I know. It's a consistent problem. So, do you want to start and give you a moment you want to think about?
Okay. I'll start with Man of the Match.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We'll start with Man of the Match.
Okay. So, Man of the Match, I mean, Paul O'Connell's one is really easy to mention. And we've not mentioned him that much, but he's just a mountain of a man. However, I think I'm just got to give it to Stephen Ferris. Because he was just everywhere. Didn't give Genny a second on the ball. And that nullified the Australian backline. So I'm going to go with Ferris.
Yeah. I think it's hard to argue with Ferris. I think there's quite a few players who, you know, the Roy Best, Tommy Bowe, Rob Kearney, all did everything asked of them. You know, they couldn't have done anything more from their position.
Kearney's a shame.
But I do think it's Ferris. I thought Heath had a fantastic game.
Yeah.
But I think my man of the match was Kean Healy. Who is fantastic throughout, you know, does basically everything, and the Ireland scrum is on top the entire game. There's basically every single, you know, there's a really important scrum penalty he wins on an Australian put in on their own line that kind of moves the score out. I think it's the last penalty they score. Yeah. So there's a few really crucial moments in the scrum, as well as being all over the place with, you know, the ball and without the ball when he's doing the tackles and that.
Yeah.
Tom, do you have any thoughts on Man of the Match?
For me, again, I'm leaning towards Stephen Ferris. Mm. I really love Jamie Heaslip's game. I think Jamie Heaslip is a guy who, I mean, very underrated, I think, from an Irish perspective. And I think, you know, he's a guy who will go down as one of the all-time great back row players for Ireland, I think. I think he had a very strong game here.
All-time great podcasters as well.
A really good podcast, a really good decision-making on his advertising, I said podcast as well. But when you look at Kean Healy, I agree with you there completely. He was fantastic. I've got to go with Stephen Ferris for he was just a guy who just exuded physicality in this game. And I think there was the big moment with Genia, but his physicality all the way through the game, a guy like that, he tilts the game in your favor. Having a guy like that in your side, like with regards to his defensive work rate, was really good. His ability to influence wherever he happened to be, where the ball was just a big factor, I think, in Ireland getting the momentum we needed in this game. Because I think it was a lot closer than the scoreline suggests. And I think it was, the likes of Stephen Ferris, his kind of physicality put us over the top. And again, I think the second rows for us were very good in this game too, O'Callaghan and O'Connell. But I think Ferris, for the big, big moment he had, because I think 38 minutes in, with a scrum like that, you know, coming up to the hooter, very, very important to make sure you finish off that half strong. That moment kind of tells the rest of the team, we've got to get to where he is. He's pushing those guys back. He's making a big, big moment that, you know, pops the guys in the bench, pops the crowd, and we're hurting these guys. These guys are wondering what the hell are we going to do to try and stop these fellas. I think for that big moment in itself, that I would give him man of the match for not only his general physicality, his general play, but that moment, because it gave Ireland collectively the kind of the feeling, you know what, we have more than these guys than what these guys can handle.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
well put.
The other guy I mentioned quickly is, I think, Conor Murray. We just talked about him, but he makes a huge impact on the bench as well. I think he's fantastic when he comes on.
Yeah,
I think he
assured.
Ironically adds a kind of real speed and pace to the way Ireland are playing, considering what we think of him now. But also he does kick well, and he is the whole, you know, at the time he was still talked of as Irish Mike Phillips because he was tall, and he does the whole engaging the fringes thing that Phillips was known for, and was the only thing Phillips did, whilst also being a proper scrum half. I thought Conor Murray was very good.
The thing is, Conor Murray, he came in practically as the Conor Murray that we know today, as in there's very little of a scale for him where he kind of starts off a bit ropey or whatever else. He came in and he's from the get-go has always been a guy you go, he's actually really good. And it's, you know, he didn't really have any, I suppose, apprenticeship period where he came in and was just dodgy with bits and pieces. He came in very fully formed and kind of a guy who was, I think, when you look beyond the whole Munster Leinster thing, I think a guy who you could tell was going to be really good from a very young age. He played 10 when he was underage as well. So like, you can tell
I've heard that.
He had that, he had the kind of the bang of a top player very, very early.
And I think as well, because it was the previous year, I remember seeing Conor Murray make his debut for Munster and everyone saying, oh, this is a really promising young lad. And it feeling so quick that he got into the Ireland team the following year, having only had kind of a handful of appearances.
Felt weird
going
to the World Cup, didn't it, at this point?
Yeah.
And starting the quarter final as well.
I helped a little bit, I think, by Tomás O'Leary, just again kind of falling out of contention, I suppose. But
yeah,
it was a very rapid rise. And I remember myself even kind of going, geez, that's a bit quick for him to be taken along then as well. But like, as in, I don't think he ever looked out of place.
No. Yeah.
Even putting in the first warm-up games, he always looked really like a guy who always looked like he should be at the level he was at.
Yeah. Shall we move on then to our dick of the day?
Sure.
William Rees-Owen, do you have any suggestions?
Sure. I mean, Quade Cooper's an obvious one for throwing that pass out the back.
Yeah.
However, my dick of the day, I'm going to say again, Ant Finger. Anthony Fienga, for very similarly to the Australia-Italy game, didn't really do anything throughout the game. And then there's one point where Australia have a decent attacking opportunity and he passes it forward into touch. Like on one of the few Australian attacking opportunities.
Yep.
Have you picked the same guy for the same reason?
So I have also picked Anthony Fienga because, similarly to the other game, right, I'm going to read you his stats from this match, okay?
Sure.
Passes 0, which is incorrect because he passes one ball into touch.
Yeah.
Forward into touch as well, I should add. Carries 0. So meters made, obviously 0. Clean break 0. Defenders beaten. Offloads 0-0. His stats are 0 across the board. Tackles made 0. Tackles missed.
He stops
0.
Brian O'Driscoll.
How do you make 0 tackles from the 13 position?
When
how do you play
bold
in the centre? Yeah. Well, okay, so Brian O'Driscoll makes 6 carries. How do you not tackle? How do you not make a tackle from 13? Yeah, what are you doing?
Or something.
So all he did was pass the ball into touch.
He touches the ball. No, he touches the ball twice. Once he throws it forward into touch, and the other he just gets barreled into touch instantly. Like he kind of catches the ball and gets barreled, driven backwards into touch. So for that reason, despite the fact there's a moment which Owen Redden picks the ball up, looks around one way, the other way, and then drops it in front of him.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes something strong to beat that. But once again, Anthony Vaienga, who I rated before watching these games back, and he's been beyond terrible.
Yeah, he has.
Anthinger.
Tom, you got any
I had Anthony Vaienga as well. I was looking at the same stats. I was looking at an article afterwards where people were kind of wondering what was the point of his time in the field. I was going to say the Australian back row as well, because they were really, I think, decisively outplayed. But I think when you look at Vaienga, when you look at quite a big game from an Australian perspective, up against a great of the game in Brian O'Driscoll, for him to fall so short with regards to any sort of tangible impact on the game, for me, I just feel disappointed for the fella, because you always want the opposition to play relatively poorly enough that you can win. But for in a situation like this, like, it just was such a non-event for him personally. And it's just almost like you hate seeing the game pass guys by. And that was certainly the case for him in this one, where you would think in an Australian backline like that, that he would have a little bit more of an impact, a little bit more, at least some bit of productivity. But again, I just felt that he was just anonymous. Same with a lot of their back row for much of the game. A lot of Australians' front row, I think, as well, were very disappointing. Yeah. But I think when you look at Vaienga and you think of the general quality of the Australian backline, I was expecting him to have a lot more of an impact in the game. Because I remember when I was like looking at the team sheet before watching the game, I remember thinking about Vaienga pretty much the same as you, that this guy, I remember him being pretty good. And in this game then, I was expecting that he would play, you know, have a bit more impact on what he did. So I was just disappointed that he had such a flop relative to my expectation of him as a player.
Absolutely, yeah. The other contender, I guess, for Dick of the Day is if said Dick has been castrated, Ben McCalman, because then there's nothing there.
How would you even do it? You'd have to find him first.
I've heard that.
With McCalman, I remember watching a game with the Western Force with him.
Okay.
It was actually quite good. But in this game, he was actually just, the game passed him by so much, I completely forgot that he was involved at international level.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't notice him again.
Yeah.
Who? And during the game, then, just, again, very little impact. And you look at the guy he's playing against, you could go, okay, fair enough. But, just one of those guys who ends up having a really good career, but just falls completely underneath my radar completely.
If you want an idea of the kind of career he had and the kind of player he was, my only real memory of his playing career was in the third place playoff of a World Cup.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
He scored a try in that third place playoff in 2011. And that's all I remember about his career. And it was a drive over from like an inch or two. It wasn't even an interesting try. Which, if that's the only memory of a third place playoff, the most pointless game, that's the moment you stand up
and fight.
Day! Until the school bell goes and they tell you this is enough nonsense. You've done an awful lot of nonsense today.
So have we.
That's what my teachers did. They called me. That was exactly the point I was making.
Oh,
my teachers used to call me over and say, it's a lot of nonsense here. Don't do so much antics and gibberish. And what do you call it?
Are you Joe Marler?
Yes, yeah. Look, Joe,
school.
Yeah, too much banter. We need less banter and more coursework.
Get off my desk and stop peeing.
We don't do a GCSE in banter anymore. That got dropped after the Labour government lost the election.
They've not elected Haskell as PM.
Yeah. It's the Archbishop of Banterbury, mate.
Anyway,
okay. I think this is as good an opportunity as any to call it. Tom, thank you very much. Where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff on social media and so on?
You can find me at @3RedKings on Twitter, patreon.com/3RedKings on Patreon, believe it or not, and 3RedKings.com, where I do write about a lot of stuff, mostly Munster and Ireland, but sometimes about other lesser teams as well.
It is very, very good. I think your stuff is absolutely fantastic and genuinely enlightening on what forwards are and what they do. which is something I have been known to not struggle with, but, you know, wonder.
Yeah, I'm going to come to you for some tips for shouting at forwards as a scrum half, so I can sound like I'm knowledgeable in these areas about mauls and stuff and tell them what to do better.
If you want to impress your forwards, if there's a fight of some kind, throw a slap of some description.
Okay, okay.
And have them have to come in and break it up, and you're just like, here, your man was getting stuck in there, like, in fairness.
Okay.
I would give that a go.
Okay, thank you. I will take that advice.
Some halves is just like, there's a fight going on, let's show a slap, let's try and get stuck in here to show what we're all about. And then the scrum halves and the rest of the backs are just kind of off over there texting or whatever the fuck. But that's one way to get them on your side for sure.
Thank you for the advice. And thank you for coming on.
That's been Bath.
Yeah, really enjoyed your company on this. It's been...
Thank you very much.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's been great. I will call it there. I almost started another anecdote, but that I don't want to take another 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because there's so much longer this could roll on for. And we've eaten enough of not just our esteemed guest, the one and only Tom Savage of the Three Red Kings' time, but of your time as a listener. You know, you're still not commuting, so you're just waiting for this to be over because you're not wasting time. It is like, you know, when you're listening to a podcast, right, and you're kind of thinking, okay, I need to go and do this thing, but there's only 2 minutes left, so I'll let it finish, I'll let it run.
We'll do that.
People are waiting to do something else. So anyway, what we should do is just end it right here and right now.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.